Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're turning our analytical lens on, well, the very tools we use to observe reality itself.
It's a fascinating topic because we so often treat data as this objective truth.
Exactly, a collection of cold, hard numbers. And we assume that when we plot them, the truth is just revealed.
But we rarely stop to interrogate the lens, you know, the tool we're using to view those numbers.
And if that lens is distorted, then our conclusions, no matter how rigorous, are going to be flawed from the start.
Which brings us to today's source. It's a paper that argues, quite compellingly, that for the past decade, data science has been looking through something of a fractured lens.
And what's the paper?
It's titled Dimensionality Reduction with Strong Global Structure Preservation. It was published in Pattern Analysis and Applications in January 2026. The authors are Jacob Gildenblatt and Jens Panke.
Okay, and it's important to mention where this work comes from.
Yes, very. It originates from the Panke Lab. Now, for anyone familiar with neuropathology or neurodegeneration research, the Panke Lab is a major name. They have affiliations with the University of Oslo and the University of Lübeck.
So they're dealing with incredibly complex biological data.
Precisely. The spatial mapping of brain tissue. So when the lab like that says our standard visualization tools are insufficient, it's not just a minor technical point. It's a major call to reassess how we're interpreting things.
So let's establish the core problem. What are we actually talking about here?
We're talking about dimensionality reduction, or DR for short.
Right. In the era of big data, we have data sets with thousands of variables. Imagine a spreadsheet for, say, gene expression in single cells.
Mm-hmm.
You could have 20,000 rows for the cells and maybe 5,000 columns for the genes. That's a 5,000-dimensional object.
And the human mind just can't visualize that. We're built for three dimensions. We can't see 5,000.
So to make any sense of it, we use these DR algorithms to compress those thousands of dimensions down into two or three.
We create a map, a scatter plot you can actually look at on a screen. And ideally, this map preserves the relationships from the original data.
Similar cells should be close together, different ones far apart. Simple enough.
Well, in theory. But this compression always comes at a cost. It's the classic cartographer's dilemma, isn't it? You can't flatten a sphere onto a map without distortion. You have to choose what to preserve.
And in data science, that choice is between two things.
It is. It's a trade-off between local structure preservation and global structure preservation.
Okay, let's break those down. Local structure.
Local structure is all about the immediate neighborhood. It just means that points, which are very similar in the original data, should remain right next to each other on the map.
So keeping neighbors together.
Exactly. And global structure preservation is the opposite. It's about the overall geometry, the big picture. It ensures the distances between points that are far apart are represented accurately.
So the distance between, say, cluster A and cluster B.
Mm-hmm. And for the last several years, the field has been dominated by algorithms like TSNE and, more recently, UMAP.
And they are fantastic at that first goal, right? The local structure.
Uncannily good. They produce these beautiful plots with tight, distinct clusters. If you've seen a single-cell data plot that looks like a collection of little islands, you are almost certainly looking at UMAP's output.
But that's where the crisis comes in, according to this paper.
That's the core of it. In their pursuit of this perfect local picture, these algorithms can catastrophically distort the global structure.
What does that mean in practice?
It means they might break connections between clusters that should be linked. Or they might place two clusters side by side that are, in reality, worlds apart.
The paper used a great analogy for this.
It did. Imagine a map of the world where the streets of London are mapped with perfect, exquisite precision.
Okay.
But the map also places the entire British Isles, just off the coast of Australia.
Right. So you have perfect local detail, but the global geometry is complete nonsense.
And if you were trying to use that map to get from London to Sydney, it would be worse than useless. It's actively misleading you.
And that's what Gildenblatt and Panke argue is happening with our data.
Yes. So their paper introduces a new framework to resolve this trade-off. They say you don't have to choose. You can see the forest and the trees.
And they do this with two main contributions, LMC and MyCS.
A Mark Mantle correlation,
yeah.
Or LMC, and multi-resolution cluster supervision, or MyCS.
Let's tackle LMC first. This is the part that handles the global preservation.
That's right. The main reason global structure is so hard to preserve is computational complexity. To do it perfectly, you'd have to calculate the distance between every single pair of points.
And for a million data points, that's just impossible. The computation time would be astronomical.
Most algorithms just ignore it. They focus on the nearest neighbors because that's computationally cheap and fast.
But LMC gets around this.
It does, by introducing landmarks. Instead of calculating every single pairwise distance, they select a smaller representative subset of points.
Right.
Let's say 1,000 of them, sampled uniformly. These are the landmarks.
Okay, so it's a reference frame.
A perfect way to put it. Think of it like celestial navigation. A sailor doesn't need to know their distance to every other ship on the ocean.
They just need to measure their position relative to a few fixed stars.
Precisely. If you preserve your relationship to those fixed points, the landmarks, your global position is maintained.
And the mantle correlation part.
That's the statistical objective. The algorithm works to maximize the correlation between the distance profiles in the high-dimensional space and the low-dimensional one.
In simpler terms,
if point A is twice as far from landmark X as it is from landmark Y in the original data, the algorithm tries to make sure that same ratio is preserved in the final 2D map.
What I found really interesting was the part about the physics of the algorithm, the forces it uses.
Ah, yes, the globally coupled forces. This is a key difference. In UMP, the attractive and repulsive forces are mostly static. They're based on that initial nearest neighbor calculation. It's like connecting points with springs that have a fixed tension.
But LMC is dynamic.
It is. Because the objective is based on this global correlation, the force on any one point depends on the configuration of the entire system. It's constantly updating.
So two points might start off attracting each other, but then switch to repelling each other later on.
Exactly. If that's what's needed to satisfy the overall global constraint, it gives the algorithm a kind of systemic awareness that previous methods just didn't have. It's like a rigid scaffolding holding the whole structure in place.
Okay, so LMC provides the global scaffolding. It makes sure the continents are in the right places.
Yeah.
But we still want that local clarity. We want to see the streets of London.
And that's where the second contribution, MyCS, comes in.
Multi-resolution cluster supervision.
The key phrase there is multi-resolution. The authors start from the idea that complex biological data has structure at many different scales, broad categories, subtypes within those, and even finer distinctions.
And one single view can't always capture that hierarchy.
So MyCS uses a multitask objective. It essentially forces the algorithm to find meaningful clusters at different levels of granularity all at the same time.
The paper mentions specific numbers for this.
Yes, k equals 4, 8, 16, and 32. So at K4, it's forced to organize the data into just 4 broad territories. That handles the core structure.
And at K32, it has to find 32 much smaller, more detailed subgroups.
By optimizing for all of those resolutions simultaneously, the final map is forced to be meaningful at every single scale.
And the supervision part.
That just means it forces the clusters to be linearly separable. In plain English, it clears the fog. It carves out empty space between the clusters, which makes the final visualization sharp and much easier to read.
So if LMC is the architect making sure the building's frame is sound,
then MyCS is the interior designer, making sure the rooms are distinct, functional, and well lit.
And the combination of these two produces some, well, pretty startling results. The visual evidence in the paper is what really sells it.
It really is. The Mammoth dataset is the perfect example.
This is literally a 3D point cloud shaped like a woolly mammoth. It has a trunk, tusks, legs, a tail. It's a complex shape, but one we can instantly recognize.
We know how it should look. We know the legs connect to the body.
So what happens when you feed this mammoth to UMAP?
The result is frankly gruesome. UMAPI is so obsessed with local neighbors that it sees the points on a leg are close to each other, so it pulls them into a tight cluster.
But it loses the skeleton.
It completely loses the skeleton.
Yeah.
In the 2D map, the mammoth has basically exploded. The legs are torn off and just float as separate blobs. The tail is disconnected. You'd never guess it was a mammoth.
The global anatomy is destroyed.
Completely. But then you look at the result from the LMC method.
Yeah.
And the projection is still a mammoth. It looks like a coherent shadow. The legs are attached. The tusks are in the right place. The global structure survives.
And the implication of that is pretty profound, isn't it? If an algorithm can tear the legs off a mammoth without you knowing.
What is it doing to your biological data? Is it severing a developmental pathway? Is it making a continuous process look like two completely separate cell types?
The Swiss roll example showed the same thing, just with a different kind of geometry.
Yes, a continuous sheet rolled into a spiral. UMA either tears it or mashes the layers together. LMC unrolls it perfectly, preserving that continuous flow.
But these are synthetic tests. The real question is how this performs on actual messy biological data, which of course is the Ponky Lab's specialty.
Right. And they apply it to mass spectrometry imaging, or MSI, of the mouse brain.
And here, global structure preservation isn't just a nice to have.
It's an absolute necessity. The spatial arrangement of the data is the anatomy of the brain. You have to know that a certain chemical profile in the cortex is spatially related to, but distinct from, a profile in hippocampus.
If your visualization distorts those global distances, you risk drawing completely false conclusions about how different brain regions are interacting.
By applying LMC, they showed they could create maps that actually respected the anatomical reality of the brain, keeping the functional regions in their correct relative positions.
Okay, the visuals are convincing, but what about the numbers, the objective metrics?
This is where it gets really impressive. They tested their methods on 20 different biomedical data sets, and they measured something called the mantle distance Pearson correlation,
which is basically a score of how well the global geometry was preserved. A score of 1.0 would be perfect.
Exactly. And the standard UMP algorithm, it averaged a score of about 0.49.
Wow, that's a failing grade. This is losing more than half the global information.
It is. But when they use their integrated method, UAMP, combined with LMC, that score jumped to approximately 0.92.
From 0.49 to 0.92.
Yes. We have to pause and appreciate that leap. In algorithm development, you're usually happy with a 2 or 3% improvement. This is a complete transformation.
It's a different class of performance.
It's capturing the global truth of the data with a fidelity that UAMP just can't approach. It even outperformed PCA, which has always been the gold standard for global structure, but it does so while keeping that beautiful local detail that UAMP is famous for.
And it's not computationally prohibitive.
Not at all. Because the complexity scales with the number of landmarks, not the total number of points, it's actually highly efficient. It's accessible.
So what's the final takeaway here? Gildenblatt and Punky have essentially resolved a trade-off that we all just accepted as inevitable.
Mm-hmm. We thought you had to choose.
Yeah.
See the leaves or see the forest. They've shown that with the right mathematical constraints, you can absolutely have both.
For anyone out there who works with data, the message seems clear. Maybe it's time to check the default settings on your visualization tools. They might be giving you a distorted view.
But for everyone else, I think there's a broader lesson here about healthy skepticism. The map is not the territory.
But with better tools, better mathematics, the map can start to resemble the territory much more closely.
And we can be more confident in the conclusions we draw from it.
We always have to ask ourselves, are we looking at the biological reality or just an artifact of the lens we chose? Thanks to the work of Jacob Gildenblatt and Jens Punky, we can now be a little more confident that the mammoth, in fact, still has its legs. And that concludes our deep dive for today. I hope this analysis helps you see both the bigger picture and the local details a little more clearly. Until next time.